Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine. Today, I have with me Dr. Lori Roxa. She's a medical microbiology fellow at Emory University, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the brain-eating amoeba. Hi, Dr. Roxa.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you for having me. Okay, so today we're going to talk a little bit about Naegleria fowleri, one of three free-living amoeba. Two of the other free-living amoeba include Acanthamoeba species and Balanuthia mandrillaris. Some people, as Kelly mentioned, know Naegleria as the brain-eating amoeba. They are found worldwide. They live in freshwater, soil, hot springs, and they grow best at 115 degrees Celsius. They are not known to live in salt water, and they cannot survive in clean, well-chlorinated water. Naegleria have both trophozoites and cysts in their life cycle. Now, the trophozoite stage can be split up into an amoeboid form and a flagellate form. So some people say there's three separate forms in their life cycle. Now, typically, Naegleria infections occur in the summer months, and patients present with a meningoencephalitis-like syndrome. They come in with headaches, fever, nausea, vomiting, and can progress to seizures, coma, and eventually death, as most patients do. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 34 infections have been reported in the United States from 2004 through 2013. Of those, 30 people were infected from fresh recreational water, such as jumping or diving into lakes. Three people were infected using nasal irrigation systems, also known as neti pots, and they had contaminated tap water in those nasal irrigation systems. One person was infected from a backyard slip and slide. Now, it's important to note that you cannot get the disease from drinking fresh water. So humans are accidental hosts, and an infection is acquired by organisms entering through the nasal mucosa. So they pass through the cribriform plate into the brain and spinal fluid, and they cause a primary amoebic encephalitis, which is why typically the in-case presentations are associated with jumping or diving into water. The incubation period is 1 to 14 days, and the clinical course after that incubation period is rapidly progressive and fatal in over 95% of cases. The clinical syndrome of primary amoebic meningoencephalitis produces hemorrhagic necrosis of the frontoorbital cortex and the olfactory bulbs. Cerebrospinal fluid from a lumbar puncture will show a high neutrophil count with low glucose and high protein, which is pretty much how bacterial meningitis presents. However, with amoebic encephalitis, an organism will not be seen on a Gram stain. Which brings us to an important topic. How do you diagnose Naegleria in the laboratory? So diagnosis can be made by the identification of amoeba in the cerebrospinal fluid or in tissue specimens. And then PCR can be used as confirmatory testing in cerebrospinal fluid. In tissue specimens and histology, you will see trophozoites, which are small, up to about 10 micrometers in fixed tissue. And they can be seen with hematoxylin and eosin stains of brain biopsies, usually at autopsy. The cytoplasm is vacuolated, and the nucleus has a prominent nucleolus. An important note on histology of Naegleria is that only trophozoites are seen and not cysts, compared to Acanthamoeba, where you can identify both trophozoites and cysts. Naegleria is also not associated with granulomas, which can be associated with Acanthamoeba species and Balanuthia. Cerebrospinal fluid diagnosis can be made by placing a drop of specimen on a slide and placing a cover slip on top, pretty much like a little wet prep without additional water or saline. When you put the cover slip on and look at it under the microscope, you can see motile amoeba. Now, in this wet prep, the trophozoites appear larger than they do in fixed tissues, and they can measure up to 20 micrometers. One way people say they can differentiate Naegleria from Acanthamoeba in wet preps is by pseudopods. Naegleria has lobed pseudopods, where Acanthamoeba has spiky pseudopods. However, PCR is the more definitive way to differentiate these two free-living amoeba. It's also very important to know that the cerebrospinal fluid specimen should not be refrigerated, as the cold can kill the amoeba. Now, Naegleria can also be cultured, and what you do is you cover a non-nutrient plate with a lawn of E. coli, and this serves as the food source for the amoeba. And then you add the sample to this lawn of E. coli. You incubate the plate at a high temperature up to 108, and you can see tracks that are made by the amoeba. When Naegleria are retrieved from culture plates, the organisms can undergo a transformation to the flagellate form of the trophozoite. Now, this is a temporary non-feeding stage, and the trophozoite will usually revert back to the amoeboid form. The culture is also important with higher sensitivity on PCR if you can retrieve the organism from culture. So how do you treat these patients that are unfortunately infected with Naegleria? It's a difficult question. So from 1962 through 2013, there have been 132 cases of primary amoebic encephalitis caused by Naegleria. Of those, there have only been 3 known survivors from the United States and 1 from Mexico. Now, all of these survivors did receive amphotericin B, which is an antifungal agent, as well as rifampin, steroids, and other antimicrobial agents. However, the 2 most recent survivors were treated with a new drug called miltefacine, which is actually an investigational anti-breast cancer treatment, and it's also been used to treat leishmaniasis. Unfortunately, there's not a lot to do to prevent this unless you don't want to go swimming in lakes, but there's not a lot known about why some people acquire these infections and others don't. And people who have acquired this infection have been swimming in the same lake where other people did not get this infection at the same time. Another important thing to do for prevention is if you do use a nasal irrigation is make sure you're using distilled sterile water, or if you're using tap water, make sure to boil it before using it.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Roscliffe, for talking with us about this amoeba today. I know that even though it's a rare disease, a lot of folks are concerned about it, obviously, because of the high mortality rate associated with it. And I really think our pathologists and clinical laboratory scientists listeners will appreciate having the diagnostic information because they may or may not see it, so it's nice to have that information if they do have a case that comes through their facility. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.